What's up and welcome to this episode of You Seem Interesting. I'm your host, Danny Rouillet. Hopefully you know that by now. If you didn't, like, hi, what's up? I appreciate you guys checking out the show. It is very, very cool that you choose to do so. You're doing it for free. It's awesome, man. We ask that you like, that you comment, you subscribe, you spread the word on all your socials. Let people know you're digging it. You're smelling what we step in here at You Seem Interesting. If you're one of our very highly valued paid subscribers, you guys are the best. Patreon.com/FunnyDanny for that. But again, the free channels are cool too. You got to wait a couple weeks. That's all to get your free episode. We're on Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Pods, Apple Pods. Whatever you like to do, we are there. All the cool places, that's where we are, man. We're behind the velvet rope. This week, my guest is NFL agent Andy Ross. Great dude. Really, really sharp guy. And he's always been super kind to me and my co-host of my regular sports radio show, Grant Paulson. He is just a splendid dude who's got some great perspectives on the world of the NFL and being an NFL sports agent. And I can't wait to talk to him. He's got some really interesting insights on a great deal of things. But we always do this around this time before I kind of give you some of the nitties and the gritties. It's the strangest gimmick in all the podcasts.
It is once again time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting. A moderately passable celebrity impression asking you.
It's Sean Connery. But of course, there's lots of things that you could do. The most important thing is to probably go to patreon.com/funnydanny. That's right. Support this person. He's very desperate and he's needy. Thank you very much, Sir Sean Connery. I do believe I've got that correct. Let's talk about being an NFL agent. It's a cutthroat world. It actually, honestly, if I'm giving my perspective here, reflects the NFL at large, because the NFL is the number one sports league in America. You know that. You don't need to have me tell you that. Just in terms of dollars generated, television ratings, it is an unstoppable machine. Each year, it seems, there's something that's going to, quote unquote, take down the NFL, right? We remember concussions were a huge thing. And is this going to affect things? The answer is no. The players kneeling and social protests, that's going to affect the NFL, said a bunch of critics. No is the answer to that. Oh, 17th game, we're not going to. Nope, nothing slows down this machine. They've inked 100+ billion-dollar television deals that don't kick in for a couple years. The money will come in. They're going to expand into global markets. They want to put a team in London. They want international marketing deals to kind of take place. A few years ago, they stopped an NFL quarterback, Tony Romo, from entering a building that was in Las Vegas to go to a fantasy football convention because it was gambling adjacent. Now, billion dollars in revenue are on the way as they've sort of not only embraced gambling, but gone all in. Everything from fantasy sports to daily fantasy to straight up betting lines on games. Things are going to be advertised. Things are going to be on your sports crawl on the bottom of the screen. As you're watching a game or as you're watching a highlight show or a preview show, you're going to see. It is Tampa Bay -3.5 over Chicago. You're going to see these kinds of things. And that revenue stream is not going to shut off. The game is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So NFL agents, folks reasonably who want to represent players and have to have themselves completely well-versed and totally updated in all the nuances of the collective bargaining agreement so they can best represent players against teams that are looking to have, costs cut in a league that is governed by a salary cap, which means teams cannot exceed a certain amount of money. You could be below it, but you're not allowed to exceed a certain amount of money. So it's in teams' advantages as they build up these massive rosters to spend as little as they can on players. That's in any industry, but especially in the NFL. And the NFL itself is super cutthroat when it comes to this, right? So a player who is no longer as productive as his contract, the NFL team most often will just sort of summarily dismiss that person, just cut them. Or, it's different than in other sports where if you sign a guy to a 10-year, $50 million deal, not that would happen, but bear with me. That 10 years is good. That $50 million is good. That's going to happen. Guaranteed deals. They're very rare in the NFL. Players will get guarantees up front, and that's kind of what you measure, but they're all structured, these contracts, for the most part, 99% of the time, so that a team can move on at some point from the player relatively pain-free. It's a really, really, really tight business. 3.5 years is your average length of an NFL contract, sometimes a lot less than that. A lot of the guys that I do know that played in the NFL before I got to my sports gig, we're all less than that 3.5 years just because That's what happens, right? When you are no longer super affordable to be a replacement level player, they find a different one, a younger player that's going to work for cheap. It's super, super cutthroat and really challenging. So I've rambled about the NFL long enough. The same thing is happening with NFL agents. Used to be this ubiquitous 3% of all dealings. Well, you get some of these big agent conglomerates, whether that's these power agencies like CAA or Athletes First or some others, they're very successful. But in order to sign players, the expectations, these guys, while they have their leverage, talking about the players, understand it. This is the only time they're going to be that kind of a commodity. And agents are basically making bets. So let's say I'm a potential first-round NFL draft pick. I'm going to be wooed. I'm going to be courted by these agents. I know I've got a very limited earnings window as an NFL football player. Even if everything goes great in my career, maybe we're talking, what, 8-9 years? By the time I'm 30, I'm going to be a lot less useful to a lot of these NFL teams. So I've got my head on a swivel. I'm going to now make some demands. If an agent comes to me and says, I'll, with these collective bargaining agreements and some of the slotting for rookie contracts, right, there's some nuance in there, and Andy will talk about this when he joins us in a few moments. But there's not that much, according to my rudimentary brain, that an agent's going to do for me sort of initially when it comes to an initial rookie contract, right? Because a lot of these things are sort of set out there initially. And again, Andy will tell me why that's wrong, but just sort of on a very rudimentary level, okay? So it's about endorsements. It's about the second contract. It's about, so all these earnings. Well, if someone comes to me and says, I charge you 3%, a big agency comes and says, you've got the full power of the agency. We charge 1.5%. And we're going to give you a fee of $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 in some cases, just to sign with us. That's upfront. That's an investment in you, knowing that we'll recoup it later on down the line from your future earnings. Who are you going to go with? Who are you going to be tempted to sign with, right? It's one of these worlds where it's so competitive and it's not terribly well regulated that agents are undercutting each other. They're doing whatever they possibly can to sign clients. And that makes it really, really hard. And that's kind of a change. That's the way this has gone here over the last several years in order to sort of maintain the status quo. So think about this. You give a guy $100,000 up front to sign. And then as you're wooing him off of a, let's call it a $1 million deal, you get your 1%. Then, a lot of that goes to the expenses of wooing the guy. You took he and his whole family out to a massive dinner, which ran you $5,000, this gift, that gift. Next thing you know, you're not taking anywhere near as much home. So yeah, you've got the image of the super agent taking his own private jet, the Jerry Maguire sort of experience. But the reality for a lot of agents, it's a grind. It's really challenging. And it's kind of a way to compete without necessarily getting tackled on the football field. But I've rambled long enough. That is kind of my primer to get you ready to experience this conversation with the wonderful Andy Ross. He is an NFL agent, and he's been doing this for a really long time. He's got some great stories. You're really going to enjoy my conversation with him. So here he is, Mr. Andy Ross. Fun guest this week. Pretty unique gig. My guest is Andy Ross, who's an NFL player agent, lives here locally in the D.C. area where I'm from out in Leesburg. Andy, thank you so much for joining me, man. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. I appreciate you having me on.
So what don't people know? What don't people know about this world? I think the common perception outside looking in is, every few years you negotiate a contract and then, you go hang out and do something else. What don't people know about kind of the daily grind of being a player agent?
Well, it's like anything. It's a job. Of course, it's one of those unique jobs where you meet somebody randomly at the airport. Like, oh, hey, what do you do? They're expecting you to say, I work in IT or I'm in sales. And you're like, oh, I'm a sports agent. Oh, really? Well, what sport do you represent? Oh, NFL. Oh, I love NFL. If it's a woman, a lot of times she'll be like, my husband would love to be in that job. Or if it's a guy, I'd love to be in that job. Yeah. I love sports. So it makes it really unique that everybody just doesn't know really what it is, right? They've seen the movies, the Jerry Maguires, the Ballers show. It always has that Hollywood flair and that flash. And not saying that there's not that flash in the business, but it's like anything. It's a job. There's some great highs to the job, experience that you have going to the Super Bowl, Pro Bowl, being around some of the guys, seeing some of the amazing work that guys do behind the scenes, success stories, things like that. But at the end of the day, it's also it's the grind of a job. It's working. You're on call 24/7, essentially, in this day and age with cell phones. And, most people only see the flashy part, but then you have your close circle, your family, your friends, that are around you. and they see the grind that you do every day, the stress. You know, if a guy gets injured, that's what people don't really realize. It's like, it's someone plays fantasy football and they're like, oh, this guy didn't make that catch and I lost my week. And, you know, we bet on it and I'll lose $100. And as an agent, you're looking at it going, this guy got hurt in the game and he's up for a contract and you're worried about that player's financial security for his future, for his family, the things that you really see by having that personal innate relationship with the guys. And you really live vicariously through them because you're so involved in everything with them. And I think the average person doesn't realize the stress that the agent business is. And that's probably why I got gray hair at a young age.
So I don't think I'm on your level, but I was drawn to a career that kind of you would say is similar in the sense that I grew up listening to the radio like everybody else. And the guys talking on the radio to me were sometimes bigger than the athletes that they were talking about because those guys changed and these radio dudes and these media dudes didn't. So I always kind of admired that. And everybody thinks they can do sports radio. Probably like everybody thinks they can do, you know, be an NFL player agent or like that. So I could certainly relate to that feeling, Andy. When did you decide this was for you? Was it something that you always had? Was it you maybe couldn't play in the NFL? So what's the next best thing? Just kind of walk me through that where you say, I choose this. This is the passion.
You know, when I was in high school, I didn't know I wanted to be an agent. I took a sports marketing class. And the reason was because there was a trip that you got to take to Disney and there was a cute, like most guys, right? There was a cute girl in the
there
class. And I was like, yeah, get to go to Disney, get to sit near this girl. She's cute. And, but when I went into the class, I just really fell in love with the industry. I just thought it was really cool. And this is pre-Jerry Maguire. So you didn't even have, people didn't even really know what agents were way back when in that time. And, we had to create an event and we had this group project and I took over the entire project. Nobody else really had to do anything because I just loved it. And then I ended up heard about an internship and there was a local company called Advantage International. And I ended up, the teacher had told us about it. And so I went and I applied and, you know, essentially they turned me down probably because of my age because I was in high school. But so I went home and, you know, kind of pouted for a second about it. And my teacher, Paul Wardinsky, was like, if you really want it, why don't you go there and tell him? So I put on my like cheap JCPenney suit that I had and went and asked to speak to the senior VP there and sat in the lobby for 2.5 hours. And he came out finally and said, do I know your parents? And I said, well, no, why? And he goes, well, you sat here for 2.5 hours and you're not leaving. So what do you want? And I said, well, I want to work for free. And I want to learn the business. And he said, do you have a resume? I said, yeah, you got a cover letter. I said, yeah, I gave it to him. He went back in his office and 10 minutes later, he came back out and his assistant came out and she said, I don't know what you said to Tom, but he loved your stuff. And, you know, you start work next week. And I worked there for 19 years.
Amazing. That is awesome. That's movie script stuff, bro. I didn't even know that. That is an awesome story.
Yeah. No, it was crazy. My first, and you know what's crazy? As a local guy, right, you'll get this. Uh-huh. My first client that I worked with was Grant Hill. So this is pre-internet days.
Sure.
So I had to find counterfeit memorabilia. So I just had a yellow pages from all over the place, calling memorabilia places, trying to find out where they got their autographs and signatures from and had to work on putting together a plan for the Grant Hill fan club. And it's crazy. I just found the notes the other day and I'm looking through it. And it's all this stuff now that with social media and with the internet and everything else that you could have done, but it's all this stuff that was predicted 25 plus years ago on this little pad of paper of different ideas. So it's cool to kind of go back and see how life evolves. But I'm very fortunate that I was given that opportunity very early on and had the right people around me to teach me the business.
No, that's fantastic. So I think an element that is probably the most challenging, but maybe rewarding and fun, but competitive is recruiting players. We think about recruiting when it comes to college sports, right? Where, you know, the 5-star, 4-star, whatever are choosing between a number of schools and this academic environment and this social life and this chance to go to the NFL. But for agents, I get the sense that this is kind of the exhilaration, right? Is that chase and those recruiting pitches. I would love to hear about that. Just kind of walk me through what that might look like and sort of the challenges we're in, and then maybe the reward when it goes right.
Yeah. So, you know, when I started off, I started off the business in the marketing side. So I worked for a number of agents, I got to kind of sponge and learn from the business from them, but I did so well from a marketing perspective. I think my first quota was to do 60 marketing deals, in a year. And I ended up doing over 200, that first year. And so they were just really impressed, but I kind of created this niche on the marketing, and I wanted to learn the recruiting side of the business, but they wouldn't let me because I was doing so well. None of the agents wanted me to go out and recruit because they needed the value of my marketing stuff. And so, finally I told them, I said, look, I'm going to go work somewhere else unless you teach me the recruiting side of the business. And so they said, okay, well, cool. We'll let you recruit 20% of your time, but you still got to do 80% on the marketing side. And so I got to learn from a guy like Mike Sullivan, who represented Michael Vick and David Carr, was very, very successful. Actually, Lee Steinberg's old partner. You know, I just would sit in his office and he would teach me and let me sponge off of him. And it was, I used to record my pitches and play them back and record myself in front of the mirror and, just trying to perfect my pitch. And it's funny, I still have some of these and they'll never see the light of day because they were horrible. They were absolutely horrible. But you know what? You learn. And I've always lived the life of, failure isn't a bad thing. Failure is an opportunity to say, okay, well, what went wrong and what do you learn from it? And one of my favorite stories, and this is one of the stories that actually I think really made my career, was I was recruiting early on in my career, Darrell Tapp, who played for a long time, now coaches at Virginia Tech. But he was like a later round guy, and that's kind of how you start because you kind of got to get your foot in the door and learn with later undrafted to late round guy. But Darrell had this crazy year and played really, really well. And all of a sudden, because he played well, you had a lot of big time agents start coming after him. But I had really developed a personal relationship with his family. Well, when it came down to me and another agent for him, and I would recruit with Mike, so he would come in and, help try to close the deal. Darrell's brother, Charles, called me up and he said, hey, Andy, even though we didn't go with you, our family absolutely loved you. We thought you did a great job. When you have some time, though, I want to kind of go over your pitch with you and explain, why we went the way we went. But we believe in you as an agent. We believe that you're going to be really good one day. So let's go over some things. When do you have time? I said, well, I got time right now. We spent 2 hours on the phone. He had notes from every conversation we had, every meeting we had, and he went over the good and the bad. And that just doesn't happen in this business. And, I was humble enough to say, hey, give me constructive criticism. I want to be great in this business. So, let me learn from this failure and of not signing him. And you know what? That really turned things around for me. And then, in 2009, I ended up signing Aaron Curry, who was ended up being the number 4 pick in the draft. And people were like, who is this guy? And how did he just sign Aaron Curry? But I think it all goes back to not signing Darrell Tapp because I was able to really learn from that experience. And very graciously, they were willing to have that conversation with me and teach me. And that's a story. I don't know if I've ever told that before, but that was one of those things that just really helped me in my career.
So what would 2021 Andy Ross, right? You got one of those like cool time machine situations, hidden camera style, and you're grading and evaluating, when you first started the first young Andy Ross agent pitch, what would you say? How would you critique it? How would you grade it? And what feedback would you offer?
I would say that the most important thing is to be okay with making mistakes. I was fortunate that my dad and I had a lot of conversations where he would teach me different, sales pitches, and, he was a serial entrepreneur. So, he had a lot of failure from a business standpoint in his early career to help him be successful as he was older. And that would probably be the biggest advice that I would give myself. And, I think I really took that advice when I was younger, though, is be okay with making mistakes, to learn. Always try to gain more experience, to be able to have more stories to tell. Be passionate about what you do. There's nothing better in life than working hard. Work ethic is one of the biggest things that, you know, teams are looking for players. Players are looking from agents. You know, agents are looking from interns. You know, you just got to grind it out. And, you know, I would also say my younger version of myself over-talked some things. So be a little bit more concise, you know, in your pitch. And, you know, interesting enough that you say that, I actually still will change my pitch. My girlfriend and I, you know, over dinner, we'll sit there and we will, she'll say, okay, well, give me a pitch as to this scenario. And we'll actually role play it and, you know, work on, you know, adjusting my pitch even, you know, 25 years later. I'm kind of nutso, but we actually do that with my kids. They're 10 and 12. And we play this game called Pass the Mic. And we give them a subject and they got 2 minutes where they got to talk about it. And it's just a way to kind of make my kids be uncomfortable so they can become comfortable in an uncomfortable situation later in life. And, you know, I think that's something that will hopefully help them be successful. It's a lesson that I learned from my dad and even from my girlfriend, Jolynn, you know, to kind of, you know, put, you know, always be working to improve yourself.
Pass the mic. That sounds like you're training them to get into my line of work right there, man. That's kind of what we do on the show most days. Filling 4.5 hours. You go, okay, we got a couple minutes. Let's talk about something. That's funny, man. I love that exercise. How has this world changed? And just, you know, in terms of the leagues have become these multi-billion dollar steam engines that just nothing can sort of stop that growth and, you know, sort of advocating for players. The rule changes I want to get into. Before we kind of get into the agent world here, Andy, I imagine this is one of the great challenges that people don't think about. The you know, all things with collective bargaining and you know, insurance rules, cap rules, this filing, that filing. How difficult is it to kind of keep up to date with all the machinations of salary cap rules and everything that has to do with the league so that you are, A, in good standing, but B, giving the best advice to your players?
I mean, there's a lot of information, like everything, right? Communication is key. So making sure the PA and the management council of the NFL, they collaborate a lot of times to negotiate different rules and regulations. And then they pass that on to us as the agent community. And then we have to communicate that to their players. But then they also have team reps on each team that they communicate it. So, you know, everything is about education as the rules change. You know, the last couple of years have been very, very challenging, or really the last year with COVID, because there have been all these massive rule changes. I mean, just today I was talking to a team, because normally I go to a game and, you know, I get a field pass before the game. You get to see the different people, executives and scouts and coaches and different things people that, you know, as well as seeing your players out there. Well, they're not doing that this year, because there's a much smaller group because of COVID. And, you know, this one team was telling me, they said, hey, we can't do the field passes, pregame passes because of COVID. And, you know, that affects things. And so the players, then you got to see them back at their home after the game, because you just don't have that interaction that you're used to. So that's, now I got to communicate that to my players and make sure that they understand, like, hey, I want to come to your game. I can't be there though. I can't be down on the field beforehand. And so you just don't get that interaction. And that's a new rule change that I didn't even know about until this morning when I was asking about it. So, you know, as far as CBA, look, whenever there's a new CBA, there's a ton of new rules. And so you've got to read this huge booklet. You've got to understand it. You know, Mike Sullivan, my old boss, you know, he created the option guaranteed basis rule. When he did Michael Vick's contract, and that was something that had never been done before. And that was when we had a new CBA. So there's all these new rules, and you just kind of, it's like any problem solving, right? You come up with a concept and then you evaluate it if it fits within the rules. And a lot of times you might do 20 different concepts that you think about and none of them fit, but that 21st one does. And that's the grind, I think, that people don't see. They think it's just a slotted deal. And player, because they were drafted here, makes X. And then when I sit down with families or I talk to people, I'll say, well, yeah, but I actually created this clause in a contract for tax language based upon the signing bonus and how it's going to be taxed and what state it's going to be taxed in. And no one had done that before. And I had to create this whole memo and this, you know, graph, and I was showing it to people. And I actually had four teams change the way they did their, they wrote their language in their contracts. But that was like bouncing that idea off, different accountants and lawyers and understanding and making sure it worked before I could even presented it to teams. And I had to make sure that it fit within the rules. And thankfully I've been able to do it. And it's, made some of my clients a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars of tax savings. And that's, as we all know, we get a paycheck, and if you can save some money from taxes, you're living better.
Yeah, that is a big deal. What is the strangest demand or request you've ever had from a player?
I did race a player one time. He asked, he said, "I think I can beat you in a back pedal if you run forward." And I bet him $100 that I thought I could beat him. And I went to the ATM and got $100 and paid him. He beat me in a back pedal.
Oh, that's good.
So I don't make that bet anymore. And I remember telling Justin Tuck that story.
Yeah.
And Tuck's like, he's like, "Well, if you can't run, you represent." That was his line with me. "If you can't run, you represent." You're unathletic and you're not fast, so you might as well become an agent.
I love that one. How was the world of, I don't even know what the right term is, agenting? Like, how has that sphere changed over the years? It's such a competitive environment, Andy. I mean, this is, it's any business in any industry is going to be competitive in certain ways, in certain strata. But the NFL is a hyper-competitive business. It's unforgiving. Players are, cut summarily the instant they're not as useful to teams to save a little bit of money or this, that, and the other. And it's a world that I imagine is reflected in sort of being a sports agent here. How has that sphere changed in your couple decades plus of experience?
It's the access. So, with cell phones, an email to your phone, everybody expects you to be on and have instant response. So where I think agents 20 plus years ago, they would be asked to do some things. It was more like communicating with the teams, negotiating a contract, and that was kind of your role. Now it's, it's kind of being a personal business manager. I mean, it's not just doing the contract, managing the relationship with the teams. It's, "Hey, my mom is sick with this. Do you know an expert in this area?" I mean, I had that with a client one time whose mom had an issue with an issue with her brain. And, I had to find a neurosurgeon. I knew a guy that was in Denver, and he did the surgery, and he was one of the top neurosurgeons. And, normally the mom would have just gone to the local doctor there, but now she has one of the top five, neurosurgeons in the country, doing her brain surgery. And so, it's little things like that, that maybe weren't going to be asked about, or asked, having one of them ask you about it years ago. But now, guys are, "Hey, I'm moving into a new area. Do you know, how I set up the cable box?" Just, they've never done that before. And that's, people forget, just because they're on TV and they're still 21, 22 years old coming in the league, I didn't know those things. I didn't know how to buy a house back then when I was, 21, 22 years old, because one, I didn't have any money. But, now you have these young guys, they have this money, they have different things they need to do, and they're learning. And, just being that father figure, older brother type figure to them, to help them, deal with all these different things in life. And, I've got no problem doing that. I love doing it because I love seeing my guys grow. They're young men turning into men, becoming responsible adults and leaders in their community. And it's great to be part of that.
Andy, my last one for you, I ask this of everybody. Give me kind of an all-time career achievement. Give me a high, give me a touchdown dance, end zone spike, maybe get a taunting penalty over it, and then give me an, "Oh my God, what have I done" moment.
Okay, so I had someone tell me one time that I might struggle in the business because I'm not tall enough. Because they said, athletes like to look, people in the eye. And so, if they're 6 feet tall, they like to have a 6 foot agent so they can look them in the eye and have this conversation. So I was like, that's just such a dumb comment. And, later that year, I ended up signing, Curry, and, we're in New York and we're at the draft, and we are you know, you do the whole stage thing. This is like 2009. So it's right before the big, you know, when the NFL made the draft prime time and had this big production around it. A lot of people were excited and happy for me. And, you know, I got a lot of text messages. So I'm sitting there and my phone is just, you know, blowing up from people just saying, family and friends saying congratulations. I had so much going on. The only person I actually responded to was the guy that told me that it'd probably be better if you were tall to be a successful sports agent. And I just responded. He just said, congratulations. I'm really happy for you. And I just said, yeah, thankfully, you know, Aaron Curry likes shorter guys. And, you know, just with a, you know, laugh and stuff like that. He's a friend, and, you know, it was just like, and he to this day still said, he goes, I don't know what I was thinking. You've had a lot of success. I said, yeah, I started wearing boots. It helped.
Yeah. So,
I
put lifts in my shoes. Bet you it felt good to fire that text.
But you know what? It's all fun. You know, it's all fun. It's guys being guys ribbing each other and stuff like that. But, you know, that was just kind of like one of those funny experiences and fun things. And, you know, that was just a really cool experience with Aaron, because he, you know, he brought that little boy from St. Jude, Bryson Merriweather, on stage with him. He was a leukemia survivor. And, you know, that was the first time the NFL had done something like that in the green room. And, you know, they've been doing it ever since. So every year when I watch the draft, that also gets me really excited, because, you know, you know, you were part of creating a program like that.
That's awesome.
So as far as like that uh-oh story is, you know, I had a guy that was supposed to, years ago, he was supposed to do a really early morning TV bit. And working the radio, mm-hmm. You get this, like you set your production up. Everybody, there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes. It's not just the interview. And this was TV. And the producer kept telling him, he said, okay, it's an early cut. It's going to be at 5:30 in the morning. I just want to make sure the player is there. And, you know, he's... I said, yeah, no, don't worry. He's fine. He's got an alarm set. I already talked to him. Not a big deal. He'll be there. And of course, you know, 5:20, my phone rings and, you know, player's not there. And 5:25, I'm calling the player. No answer. You know, he had had some insomnia issues. So he would have to take Ambien sometimes to sleep. He had trouble sleeping that night. He had taken Ambien. He had just overslept. And the producer's just yelling at me. She's screaming, we had a live bit. We're not doing it here. We're all just come down. And so then the player, you know, goes to me. He's like, finally wakes up. And he's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, you can't do this. I'm like, you know, this is all that stuff that happens. I'm trying to educate him on, you know, why it makes a big deal and things like that. And, you know, and then we proceed to get in a little bit of an argument about it. He was like, look, man, now I'm pissed. He's like, I'm coming to see you. He's like, where are you? I'm like, I'm at the office. So he gets in his car. He's like, I'm driving up. What's your address? He didn't know the address. He was pissed at me. We wanted to have a conversation face to face on that one. And you know, they got there. We laughed about it, and you know, he learned from it and understood. But you know, it's just the big thing that I learned on that is, in this business with clients, sometimes you just have to over communicate, and you have to make sure that they understand when you're doing something, you know, not just the basis of it, but everything that's around it. Right. And, you know, why, if you're doing a bit at 5:30 in the morning, you have to be awake. And I also have to have the understanding too, as an, you know, an older agent, a seasoned agent now, that if you don't think a guy's going to make it, don't agree to something. Mm. Make sure that they, you know, because everything is about follow through, and it's your reputation. And so, you know, that was a learning moment for me as a young agent way back when. But, you know, I think that's the kind of stuff that we talked about earlier. That's the kind of stuff you learn.
Andy, this was great, buddy. I could talk to you about this stuff for hours, man. I really appreciate the time this morning. You're interesting as hell, buddy. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Glad to do it.
Thank you so much again to Andy Ross, NFL sports agent. NFL sports agent? What a weird turn of a phrase. He's an agent. He's a sports agent, and he represents NFL football players. That sounded like someone that's never talked about sports before. He's an NFL sports agent man person. Anyway, appreciate Andy Ross joining the show. Some great insight there from him. First of all, I love that Daryl Tapp family story. If you guys are sports fans, you may remember Daryl Tapp was a defensive end, went to Virginia Tech, had a nice NFL career. They bounced around, played for a few different teams. But I just love that story. And kind of the salient, I think, theme through the conversation with Andy was really about his willingness to self-evaluate and the desire to improve. And that's something that I think is very relatable to all of us, but really, really to me. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn here. I know I stink at a lot of stuff. I know that it's just not natural to me. And I know that there are things that I'm not good at. We tend as adults, and I think kids a lot of times too, to try to avoid some of those things. You work around those things, right? It's just not in my strength. And there's some stuff I don't care about getting better at. But the things that I'm passionate about, the things that I love, the things that I want to do, I crave feedback. I'm desperate for feedback. What do I do well? What can I work on? I love getting better. It's like my favorite thing to do. Again, I don't need to get better at folding the laundry. My wife would argue differently, by the way. I probably do need to get better at that, but I don't like it. I don't want to do that. I don't care about doing that, but I care about, you know, being a stand-up comic. I care about doing my radio show. I care about this podcast. When I'm passionate about something, all I want to do is figure out how I can be better at it. And I heard that exact same sentiment kind of come through in all of Andy's answers. And I think it served him incredibly well in his couple decades plus of experience. And he's super modest about some of those things, by the way. I mean, he's excellent at what he does, and he's sort of deflected on a few different occasions. But yeah, I mean, the guy is just simply terrific, again, as an agent. And that role that he's talking about, I hadn't really thought about that. And here's what I mean. We're talking about 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds. I was a terrible person as a 20, 21, 22-year-old. I was a boob, an idiot. I was not helpful. I was a taker from society. I made things worse. I didn't produce anything. I had debt. I just was around. I was just breathing air, eating fried food. I didn't know anything. And imagine if you would thrust millions of dollars and the limelight kind of into my face at that point. And Andy is an astute guy that's been around, that has seen a few things, is really helping and helpful in that way to a lot of these young men and helping mold them. And it's almost like, you know, I don't want to overstate it, but it is kind of like an older brother, even a father figure in a lot of ways to some of these kids, right? Who are, again, in a position that is so unique and so different than what everybody else is doing. Because think about it. You graduate from school. What are you doing now? Hey, probably move back in with your folks, trying to figure out your student loan debts, maybe partying with some friends, maybe one last beach trip before you start that job, or you got some gig, or maybe going back to grad school for even more debt. Just different, right? These guys are playing at a job. In a game that hundreds of millions of people care about. Millions and millions of people care about what they're doing. And Andy's got to sort of help guide them. And that's kind of one of the main responsibilities, I'd argue. Yeah, you're trying to get them the best contract possible, the most security, the best advertisements, the best this and that, to set them up for life. You're advocating for them with the teams, in the community, with everything else, right? You're their representative. You're there to deal with salary negotiations, which is miserable. You're there to get the best possible terms for your client. That's all part of it. But to maintain that relationship so that the guy doesn't backdoor you or whatever, it's just the right thing to do. That sentiment, again, I thought was really interesting. It's not something I'd ever thought of when it came to player agents. And I probably should have, to be honest with you, because that was, I thought, really profound. I love, some of those, again, just kind of those old yarns and some of the stories of him beating down the door as a high school student to say, this is what I'm doing. And then just casually mentioned, I worked with Grant Hill, you know, NBA Hall of Famer, Northern Virginia resident, went to South Lakes High School. I remember actually seeing Grant Hill play in high school. And you could sort of tell that dude was different than some of the other guys he was going up against at the high school level. He went to South Lakes, I think, as I said. I watched him play my local high school just because, you know, you had to go see this guy, this 6'7 dude who's going to Duke, who could jump out of the gym and do anything you wanted on a basketball court. He wins the opening tip, just sort of starts to run down the left side of the court, talking about Grant Hill. And the point guard takes two dribbles past half court and just flings the ball up in the general direction of the basket. Well, here comes Grant Hill, like a condor, like just some sort of, you know, otherworldly figure, and he jumps from outside the lane, goes up. I swear, his head is at the rim. His right arm is probably close to where the top of the backboard is. He catches it, and just the way his body position was, he dunked it reverse as a high school student. People didn't do that then. He did that then. And again, you could go tell that this dude was going to be different. So Andy's just sort of casually working with Grant Hill. I love that kind of story as well. And, you know, the highs and lows that he told of, you know, where you're left sort of as the point of contact for somebody. I think a lot of us have been there, right? That story about the athlete dude who didn't make it, who overslept or whatever it was there at the end. I can remember, and I've been on the other end of that, where you're going, where the hell is your guy? What's going on? And you're just yelling at this dude, and Andy's just got to wear it. You know, I thought that was incredibly relatable. And again, as somebody that, you know, I was looking at my watch, I'm going, our radio segment starts at, you know, at 10:04. We've got from 10:04 until 10:12. If he's out there at 10:04, the whole thing's ruined. Bah! Like being super upset about that. Whereas, you know, to regular people in real life, it's like, yeah, whatever, 5 minutes. It's like my 10th obligation that morning. Just interesting and funny to think about for me. But that's going to do it for us this week on You Seem Interesting. Thanks so much for checking us out. Patreon.com/FunnyDanny. Appreciate everybody that listens. Paid subscribers, you guys are the best. For free, you guys are cool with us too, man. Just as long as you're checking it out. Like, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. Please spread the word at You Seem Interesting on the grams, at @interest_pod on the Twitterverse, and we're on Amazon Music, Apple Pods, Google Play, Spotify, all of the cool spots. But you can listen to us right there, patreon.com/funnydanny. You get it early, you get it first, and that means you're extra special. Thanks to my producer, Andrew Russell, as well. Until next week, all of you seem interesting.